Have you listened to season 7 of the Drinks Adventures podcast?
The mixer category has become dominated by large conglomerate brands who ultimately ended up focusing more on manufacturing efficiency than quality or flavour.
Fevertree's Tim Warrilow gives you the inside story of how his company changed mixers forever.
My research showed that the highest quality quinine was unfortunately just about the most remote and lawless place, which was in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo.
Fevertree, the mixer of choice in the world's top bars and restaurants, and a proud supporter of the Drinks Adventures podcast. Find their new soda collection out now.
We've developed this Mexican lime and yuzu soda to go with vodka, and this Italian blood orange soda to suit this spritz mood movement that is growing around the world.
Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape varieties.
The most expensive beer in history.
People will turn around to me and say, oh, I'm just making gin while I wait for my whiskey to get ready.
Because wine is an adventure.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
The prestigious title of Sake Samurai.
Looking at whiskey in more of an artful culinary way.
They kind of look at it as a novelty more than anything. The guy from the rock bands is making wine.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson. And this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. You might remember that back in season 3, we met Cameron McKenzie, co-founder and head distiller of Four Pillars Gin. At the time, Cam told us that Four Pillars was progressing towards a major redevelopment of its distillery and cellar door in Healesville, Victoria.
We've managed to acquire the property next door now, which we will knock over next year. So this partnership with Lion allows us to now continue to develop the footprint of this business in production, in tourism, hospitality.
If you haven't heard that episode yet, I really encourage you to go back and listen to Cam tell the backstory of Four Pillars Gin. It's definitely one of the best interviews we've brought you so far on the show. After some delays due to the pandemic, Four Pillars finally broke ground on the $6 million development in February 2021. I spoke to Cam on the eve of the project commencing, and I'm now able to share our chat with you as a bonus episode of the podcast.
It has been a while. We bought the block of land, you know, gee whiz, about 3 years ago, maybe even longer. And it took a little while for the leases that were in place to expire and for the guys to move out. And then we sort of bulldozed it. But we took our time with it too. We haven't had too many troubles getting this developed and building it. I think when you have good planning people and good architects on board, you know, Breathe were amazing. They sort of cut through a lot of the rubbish and the council had a huge amount of faith in them. And for that reason, it was a pretty smooth process to get it to at least at this point. Obviously, then COVID hit and tourism and hospitality was a pretty uncertain future for a while there. So I think the right thing to do was to put it on ice. The builders were put on ice anyway with what they could do. So it's nice to sort of see the clouds disperse and the sun come out and finally get this thing going.
And you weren't affected so badly by COVID that it was going to put you off this expansion?
No, I think, you know, Stu, Matt and I have always been pretty ambitious, and having the support of Lion sort of sitting on our shoulder to give us confidence and advice that this is the right thing to do. I think we could see towards the end of the lockdown that tourism was going to bounce back, certainly domestic tourism was going to bounce back fairly hard, and the interest we had almost immediately as soon as restrictions started to ease showed us that domestic tourism was going to be pretty solid for a while yet. So we've always had a long-term vision for the business. It's never been a short-term vision. I think this is 100% the right thing to do if we want to be a global craft brand. We have to have a strong home and we have to make a real statement, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
I do remember, though, seeing Stu at the Surrey Hills venue last year, and he was saying that, you know, the timing couldn't have been worse to open that particular venue.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, opening a bar in the middle of a pandemic is not our finest moment. But, you know, surprisingly, it's doing what we wanted it to do. You know, it's showing a little bit of Healesville in Sydney, and it's showcasing our gins and our brand and our masterclasses and our experiences. So that will build into what we want it to be again in the longer term. It's never going to be a short-term thing. I don't think you can do any of these things short-term. They just don't work, regardless of pandemics or not.
Now, it sounds like the expansion in Healesville has been driven by the hospitality side, but is there significant production expansion going to be happening as well?
Yeah, it's certainly both. You know, hospitality is hugely, and tourism is hugely important for us. And anyone who's been out here on a weekend would see that it's generally queues at the door, which frustrates us on a number of fronts, particularly when it's pouring with rain or it's stinking hot weather. I'd really rather people were inside having a G&T. But our gin growth has been, you know, really significant, and the existing capacity in production is, we haven't maxed out, but we can see on the horizon where there's a tipping point where we're really going to have to start moving things off-site if we had to. Potentially packaging might have to go off-site, and that's why the next part of production in this new building will be to move our packaging from its existing site. Our bottling line, our packaging and our fulfillment is still in the same building as the stills. Now we can pick those up, move them into a purpose-built sort of packaging area where trucks can move in and out freely without disturbing the traffic on Lilydale Road. And the existing production area will be all about stills, botanicals and barrels, and we'll hard pipe from one side of the building to the other straight through to the bottling line, and all of the kind of unsexy stuff of pallets and glass and cardboard can sit next door and just be far more efficient. So it will increase our capacity quite significantly. There's a new still coming, which I'm hoping will be here by the end of the year and ready to commission early next year. And that'll be another 2,000 litre still, the same size as Beth, which would be the largest Carl still in Australia. So she'll get a new sister, which will be really exciting. Name as yet unknown.
Visualising the current setup there, where you've got the existing hospitality space and then the existing distilling space, and you've mentioned the move of the packaging line. Are the other spaces going to continue doing what they're doing now, or do they move into this sort of new site as well?
No, we'll keep the existing hospitality space, and really that focus will retain sort of distilling and tastings as its priority, and botanicals. You know, that's a very sensory experience in that part of the building. And then I guess people have a bit of a choice then. They can either have, if they're there for a tasting and they want to see the stills and talk botanicals, that's the side of the building. And then this new area will have a bit more of a cocktail bar focus. There's a bit of an outdoor deck area, an event space, and we'll sort of expand that offering. But it should be a pretty seamless hospitality area to go pretty much from tastings and distilling right through to cocktails and sort of event space. So there'll be no change in there. That space is too good for us to change, and I love it, so I don't want to change it.
Will there be any completely new offerings that you're going to have, you know, maybe from a food standpoint as a result of having this extra space?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, food's always one that we wrestle with a little bit. We don't want to be a restaurant. Food will always be on our terms and will always relate back to gin. So Matt Wilkinson, who's worked with us now for a couple of years on our Made From Gin products, his task really is to come up with a food offering that isn't so much a restaurant, but it's more substantial snacks that always come back to the gin. So, you know, using caviar, you know, Bloody Shiraz caviar, using our marmalade, using chocolate, all of those sorts of things. He'll start to expand into that new area. But I wouldn't say it's going to be a restaurant per se. It's just going to have more substantial sort of ginny snacks. I've never been keen for the tail to wag the dog there. You know, we're not going to be a restaurant, that's for sure. There's enough great ones in and around the Yarra. So we'll just do good gin snacks.
What about the Yarra, speaking more broadly? I know that obviously Phil Sexton's got his reborn Matilda Bay there as well.
Yep.
So is there sort of interesting stuff happening generally in the region at the moment?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think people reassessed a bit during the pandemic, and maybe there was the natural inclination to retreat a bit, but I think the opposite is happening. You know, Jaden Ong is setting up one street away opposite Watts River Brewery with his winery and cellar door and a little event space in there, which is really exciting. Levantine Hill is pouring millions of dollars into their new development, which looks amazing. Jared Hudson from Easy Tiger in Melbourne, and he's now the chef at the Hillsville Hotel. So he's got some plans in there that's probably worth having a chat to Michael Kennedy about. But there's just little things going on and simmering away. Little things will grow into big things in the region, and I think people will be surprised when they come back out. Obviously, Attica Summer Camp is a huge coup for the region. Where I'm off there in a couple of weeks, and he's doing great things. And I think that just shows enormous faith in a really vibrant, exciting region that's an hour from Melbourne.
And this is obviously coming off the back of another incredible year for Four Pillars, winning that gong for the second year in a row.
Yeah, that was so exciting. And I think it's pretty much exactly what the whole team here needed. 2020 was a kick in the guts for everyone. But to see our entire team lift when that news came out, it was just, I think it was a real pat on the back for them that they could maintain their standards, maintain their drive and their energy and their passion for the product, even through a really tough time. We won it for the gins, not for the hand sanitizer, but we did enough of that for our sins, and we did it to keep everyone working, and those guys really repaid us by just maintaining that attention to detail and everything they do. And, you know, the day hospitality reopened out here, it was like they, you know, they hadn't missed a day. They were so back into it and just wanted to hug everyone but weren't allowed to, but it was amazing. So, yeah, 2020, what a weird year, that's all I can say.
Yeah.
So highs and lows.
Has those competition successes started to drive increased interest in the export business?
They certainly do. They sort of validate a lot of the people who've supported us overseas. You know, we picked up listings in the UK, Waitrose and Marks and Spencer. So the timing of that trophy was brilliant because it really validates those listings and those guys who've, you know, that the team that have listed it in those outlets looked at the gins and said, geez, these are really good. We need them on the shelf. And then suddenly you win that trophy. They're saying, well, we knew they were good. That's great. We've backed ourselves there. And the uptake is, it's challenging times in the UK, but just getting those listings has been hugely helpful for us. We've just picked up a really good listing in California as well with BevMo. So we're starting to see some interest. I think the first year you win it, people pay attention, and a few weeks later it might be forgotten, but you win it a second time. The trade and sort of gin peoples really start to pay attention to it. So it certainly helped a lot, I think, in export. Yeah, we also dropped our entire duty-free business, unfortunately, you know, while this was going on. So those exports have sort of picked up some of the slack there, which has been really good.
How's the olive leaf going?
I think that's probably the surprise packet of 2020. I thought we'd only do a few distillations of that, and it's gone really crazy. I don't think there's a viable rosemary bush or bay tree in Hillsville now. We seem to have raided pretty much everyone.
Oh, you should come up to Marrickville. There's rosemary growing everywhere here.
That's what we thought in Hillsville. No, it's gone tremendously well. It's exceeded our expectations tenfold, really. I think bartenders have loved it. It's nice to see people not afraid to make a martini at home. You know, it's only two ingredients, and it's amazing how many people get it wrong. So people are getting a bit of confidence there in that. But it's exceeded all expectations for us. I always thought it was a delicious gin, and I'm really pleased to see people have embraced it the way they have.
So which products, apart from that, are really driving most of your growth at the moment?
I think Rare Dry Gin and Bloody Shiraz have always sort of taken the lead with our volume. And, you know, Bloody Shiraz is always such an unknown quantity for us. You know, we'll crush over 100 tonnes of Shiraz again this year to maintain that. They're both the products that have been listed in those retailers in the UK. And, you know, we've never really been able to do much with Bloody Shiraz internationally because the domestic market has just decimated our stocks of it. Now we've finally sort of been able to source some really good fruit and grow the volumes of that to be able to service the export market as well. But for the moment, Rare Dry seems to be the one that's growing the most along with Bloody Shiraz. You know, it's been a gin and tonic kind of summer, I suppose. Not so much down in Victoria, but other parts of Australia have really been into it. Spiced Negroni is a bit of a sleeper for us. It grows all the time. It surprises me every time I sort of get a note saying, you know, our stock levels are at a certain point. We need to make a bit more spiced Negroni. I just go, wow, okay, that's really interesting. It it continues to grow and do things. And this year we've got a few other bits and pieces coming up that'll turn a few heads. So, we'll have to wait and see, I suppose.
Now, the property that you acquired next door, did that happen before or after you had Lion on board as a partner?
No, we bought it before, actually. That, I guess, was when we really pushed all our chips into the middle of the table, when we were really lucky to get that property. I knew the owners of it. I'd known them for 20-odd years, a really wonderful local family, and they were thankfully big fans of Four Pillars and what we were doing in Healesville. So, yeah, they came in and said, look, we're thinking of selling. Are you interested? So we wasn't a big negotiation. We just thought, look, we really have to get it. Our growth would suggest we're going to need the space. And so we were really fortunate. We were fortunate to get the building we're in, to be honest. That even that was just luck. This was the number one site that I had on my list of places to put Four Pillars. And I live across the road. And I literally was just driving home one day from the old distillery and saw a real estate agent talking to the owner out the front, and we bought it the next day. So it was just complete luck that we managed to get the first building, and just a long relationship with a local family that got us the second building.
So you're turning sods on Friday this week. What sort of timeline are you expecting the project to follow?
If everything goes smoothly, we think we should be finished by Christmas this year. So I would like to think early December. Our hospitality manager, Scotty, will have a heart attack if I hand him the keys on Christmas Eve, but wouldn't be the first time for Scotty. So, yeah, I'd say early December.
Good stuff. Well, congratulations again, and best of luck with the project.
Thanks so much, James. Appreciate the support. Really looking forward to getting you out here for a drink.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.